Hey, Patreons and YouTube member subscribers. This is your monthly podcast that we're making just for you. And we're going to go over a few new things that we won't talk about with other people unless you want to share them. And got lots of things that happened recently that are really cool to talk about. But let's start with the latest naval news here is the Republic of Korea, that South Korea, has commissioned her first KSS-3 submarine. This is from a piece written by Martin Manarashi. And Martin says South Korea commissioned the first Dosan On Chang-ho class, or KSS-3, as it's known. The ROKS SS-83 was built by Daewoo Shipbuilding Marine Engineering DSME for the Republic Korean Navy. So we've got a brand new diesel boat class out there now. So we'll have to see how this compares to, say, the Japanese Soryu class, which is very capable, and the impending coming attack class for the Australians. So we are going to do a comparison eventually whenever we have all three of those side by side with some details to see which one is better. Right now, the dominant conventionally air independent diesel boat in the Pacific region, Rim region, is that Japanese Soryu class. It is the fastest, it has the longest endurance, it has a large weapon payload, it can shoot the Mark 48 ADCAP, and it is also air independent, so it's very quiet and can do the ISR missions. It's pretty much does everything. We'll see if this submarine is as good as that one. Let's read from the piece and see what details they come out with. So the Republic of Korea Navy commissioned its first indigenously built submarine capable of firing submarine launched ballistic missiles to enhance underwater defense capability. This is an SSBN. Are you kidding? Oh, it's not an N, it's an SSB. Okay. Yeah, this is a wow, a ballistic missile submarine. So there must be a ballistic missile tube or two in that sail. I honestly had no idea that they were even interested in a ballistic missile submarine, but it makes sense since North Korea not only has a strong ballistic missile program, they also have a ballistic missile submarine, that South Korea would have one as well. So that puts it in a whole different category. You really can't compare that to the Soryu, which is an attack submarine, an SSK. This is an SSB, so two different missions. All right, let's see what it says here. After the deployment of the submarine will take an active role in its country's strategic system against threats, outlines the ROK Navy press release. From the press release, it says, today's successful delivery and commissioning of the Dosan On Chang-ho is a breakthrough for Korea, which has developed the highest level 3,000-ton class submarine in only 30 years of submarine operation. So they've only been operating submarines for 30 years, and they have this very advanced SSB. It can be considered a significant milestone that can once again prove to the world the advanced technology of Korean defense industry. It should serve as a signal for a leap forward in defense industry technology. So a little bit of corporate speak there saying that they build good submarines. And I'm just curious, as I look at all these masts and antennas raised in the sail, there is no room for a ballistic missile tube there. So I wonder if the missile tube is behind the sail like it is on American boats. If that's the case, it's either a very small ballistic missile or this boat is rectangle in shape. Let's see if there's a picture of it in dry dock. That would be interesting. Okay, the basic design for the rather large 3,300-ton surface displacement, 3,800-ton submerged displacement. Wow, that is kind of big for a diesel boat, but it's a ballistic diesel boat. One SSK type submarine started at 2004 at the Hyundai Heavy Industries. Local companies like Hanwha and STX Engine are also involved in the project. British companies BMT and Babcock provide technical assistance. Now, here it calls it an SSK. So, did I misread that? Let me double check myself. Submarine launch ballistic missiles. That is not an SSK by NATO standards. That would be an SSB. But for some reason, this piece refers to it as an SSK. This might be a typo. This might be just a mistake. We'll see. Let's continue reading and see what it says. The KSS-3-1 submarine has a length of 83 meters, a width of 9.6 diesel boat dimensions, but it displaces a lot of water. It's very heavy. The draft is 7 meters, which is 9, has a cruising range of 10,000 nautical miles. That's very long, actually. And it's at a speed of 20 knots. So, yeah, this is good. It has 8 53-centimeter torpedo tubes. Wow. And 6 VLS. Interesting. That accommodates the future cruise missile. Okay, so this is kind of a jack of all trades here. It is a definitely an attack submarine with 8 53-centimeter torpedo tubes. That's 21 inches, the same as the American Seawolf. Okay, so this, in terms of offensive capability, is like a Seawolf class for torpedo tubes with a Virginia class for VLS tubes that shoot cruise missiles, not ballistic missiles. So there's some contradicting information in the first few paragraphs of this article. If they mistakenly thought the cruise missiles were ballistic, then this is definitely an SSK for sure. You could even call it an SSG for having 6 VLS tubes. And the difference between that is, what is its primary function? Is it going to be to launch those missiles and run away, or, you know, do another thing? Or is it to use the torpedo tubes in an anti-ship role? So it's either a killer or an SSG, which can do both land attack and ship attack, or it's an SSB. This piece has called it all three of those, so I don't know which one is the one to go with. It's a little confusing. If you want to read this article for yourself, it's at navalnews.com. It's their latest article. It should be right at the top if you go there right away as soon as we release this. Construction of the first class SS-083 started with the first steel cutting ceremony at the DSME shipyard in 2014. So they've built this over 7 years. The naming ceremony took place in the 16th. The boat was named in honor of the leaders of the Korean nationalist movement on the 20th of the 20th century. Launch took place on the 18th. So it's been in some form of sea trials since the 18th, and it's now being commissioned. So it was launched. Okay, commissioned. Gotcha. There's a nice little picture of it. And there you can see the missile tubes are aft of the sail, as I expected. But they're definitely not ballistic missile tubes. So, yeah. Compared to the first batch, KSS-3 Batch 2 submarine, the follow-on submarines, are expected to have a longer hull, bringing the displacement closer to 4,000 tons. Wow. And 10 VLS tubes. All right. This is definitely an SSG. They call it an SSK in the piece, so we'll go with that for now. But whenever they go to 10 VLS tubes, that firmly cements it into the SSG category classification. But my first impression is this is a very offensively capable submarine. I mean, it could launch, it may not be able to wire guide all 8 torpedoes, but it could physically launch 8 torpedoes in a salvo, one after the other, because it has 4 on each side, plus the 6 VLS tubes that the first one has. Could launch all 6 of those tubes one after the other as well. So you could have, what, 14 weapons in the water or and in the air combined in a matter of minutes. That is a great, great capability. Now, we don't know any details other than its range is 10,000 nautical miles at 20 knots, which is really good. But we'll have to see some, you know, war games with this. That's probably the only way we're going to get public information on this, is see how it performs in the next set of war games, which are due. Well, we do war games regularly, but the next big one is Talisman Sabre in 2023. So that's going to be another 2 years before we see that. And by then, this submarine will have had some experience and the crew will have gotten better. But definitely a powerful attack submarine by first impression, and certainly not a ballistic missile submarine. This is not true. Yeah, so that needs to be corrected. All right. Very cool, though. Very cool. All right. So we're going to change the format a little bit here. I want to take some time during these podcasts that are strictly for the Patreons and the YouTube subscribers, member subscribers, and read some of your questions. I went on to YouTube comments. I wanted to read some of those, but those come from just everybody across the globe. And it was just too many that were not focused. So we're going to go to the Patreon page instead. We're going to read your comments here, and I'm going to address them this way. And that way none of these get missed. A lot of you have a long history of chatting with me, like this gentleman here, Gustav. And so we're going to start with him. His most recent message is, any chance you could post a brief on this? And he gives me a YouTube link. So we're going to go ahead and just play this. Let's see what happens here. Ooh, Warthog Productions. Let's put some headphones on so I can hear what's going on here, baby. What is this? South China Sea drama. Hold on a second. This is a 4-minute video called A British Aircraft Carrier Targeting Something. Okay. Target practice for China? Is it? Let's see what they were doing with the aircraft carrier. All right. Let me give you some... background here. This is not the South China Sea yet. Maybe the video is going there, but this is video from the Black Sea. This happened back in July, maybe even late June, where we had sent a destroyer with it was three destroyers working together. One was Royal Navy, one was American. I think there was like a Dutch one with them, I think. Anyway, three destroyers transiting from Ukraine down to Georgia, and along the way they passed the Crimea Peninsula. And there is a shipping lane that borders the 12-mile international waters limit right there. And part of it goes inside the 12-mile limit. But as long as it's a shipping lane and the ships in the shipping lane are all declared, they're flagged and so forth, like our ships are, passage is normal. They're not breaking any international laws as long as they stay in the shipping lane. Well, Russia, whenever saw the ships coming through, prepared themselves by getting planes ready and some ships ready to escort or, you know, drive alongside our ships as we went past the Crimean Peninsula. But then things got a little out of hand, and I'll let the piece describe what's going on.
Now China is refuting a claim made by the Royal Navy that a UK aircraft carrier strike group spotted Chinese nuclear-powered submarines in the South China Sea as the People's Liberation Army Navy boat shadowed the flagship carrier HMS Queen Elizabeth.
Okay.
A war of words has also unfolded in the media of the respective nations. On Tuesday, a Communist Party newspaper in China suggested that Chinese submarines used the carrier group for target practice before the boats intentionally revealed themselves to the Royal Navy vessels.
All right, so this is a very common thing. We're back in the South China Sea now. This just happened this last week where the HMS Queen Elizabeth was transiting the Straits of Taiwan. She pulled into Guam. She's doing operations over there. She was even, I believe, part of Operation Talisman Sabre as well. We had a French aircraft carrier with her. I don't think the French aircraft carrier is here anymore. Anyway, a lot of naval activity happening in the South China Sea right now. And it's not uncommon for submarines of other nations to watch those ships and conduct drills, mock firing on those ships and so forth. And the Chinese apparently had done that. And then afterwards, they surfaced themselves in proximity so that they would be detected and be like, hey, we've been here watching you the whole time. Kind of just showing off that they were able to get close into weapons range and conduct these drills. All right, that's the context that we're talking about here.
According to the UK's Daily Express newspaper, two 7,000-ton Type 093 Shang-class submarines, which are armed with cruise missiles, had been located by specialists in the operations room of HMS Kent and HMS Richmond.
So they were detected.
Both are Type 23 Duke-class frigates, each named after British dukes, and the class currently forms the core of the Royal Navy's destroyer and frigate fleet, serving alongside the Type 45 destroyers. The warships were designed for anti-submarine warfare and apparently are quite good in that regard, as they detected the pair of subs that had been shadowing the carrier group from the South China Sea into the Western Pacific. Operators aboard the frigates, which were reported to be working together in a sweep pattern, pinged the submarines. A third Type 093 submarine was also located by an astute class submarine that is operating with the Royal Navy's flotilla. All of the Chinese submarines were reported to have been detected by their unique propeller sounds. This shows that our anti-submarine capabilities, which declined significantly during Iraq and Afghanistan, are back up to speed and doing what they're supposed to be doing, Rear Admiral Chris Perry told the Daily Express.
That's pretty good.
It's good news.
That was a sonar buoy.
During the Falklands War, Perry was involved in the only sinking of an enemy submarine since World War II, and
notice
he noted,
close they are
"We always worry about submarines, though we worry more about Russian boats because they are more advanced and quieter."
Yep.
The Chinese Global Times disputed the Royal Navy's claims that it successfully pinged the submarines and said it was not credible.
Well, of course, China's going to say that they were not detected, but clearly they were. I mean, I believe it. I've been able to tour modern naval, Royal Navy destroyers, or I think it was a frigate, actually, and I was really impressed with their ASW suite. There's no doubt in my mind that if they were anywhere within, you know, depending on the conditions, but we'll just say 30, 40 miles, they probably got snapped up. And that's quite a long range for detecting a submarine. That's a credit to their capability. Like whenever I was on board looking at all their equipment, I understood the capability of what they were showing me. And it was very impressive. And again, I have to reiterate, I'm so glad the United Kingdom is on our side because of their ASW capability. We wouldn't want to go as a submariner against a Royal Navy frigate or destroyer. You're in for a fight. You might want to just shoot it with cruise missiles from way far away because you're going to be hard-pressed to be getting into torpedo range.
The news outlet quoted Song Dongping, a military expert and TV commentator, who said many UK warships haven't reached their full operational capability, and that the Royal Navy's anti-submarine capability is limited. As a necessary measure of defense, it is possible that the PLA used the HMS Queen Elizabeth Aircraft Carrier Strike Group as an imaginary target for practice, a submarine expert who asked not to be identified told the Global Times. Another source said it was possible that the Chinese submarines may have intentionally revealed their locations after having accomplished their missions, thus sending a warning to the UK carrier group. The Chinese Navy currently has 66 submarines, more than the US Navy or the Royal Navy, and while many are aging, the sub force has been used to project military power to influence nations across the Pacific. The Royal Navy's Queen Elizabeth Carrier Strike Group is currently on its maiden voyage to the Indo-Pacific and this week was conducting a port visit to Guam, while some of the carrier's escorts, including Kent and Richmond, were docked at naval bases in Japan. Beijing had protested the UK's flagship carrier's transiting of the South China Sea, but UK Defence Secretary Ben Wallace had told the Times of London last month that the Royal Navy's warships would sail where international law allows.
Yeah, exactly.
Wallace added, "It's no secret that China shadows and challenges ships transiting international waters on very legitimate routes. We will respect China and we hope that China respects us."
Yeah, so what China's doing by protesting is they're trying to claim the entirety of the South China Sea and the Taiwan Strait as their own waters, which is, they have no claim on that at all, no legitimate claim, even though they are trying to make the claim. So by doing these protests, they're trying to build a precedent or a history of, hey, you're not allowed in these waters. Remember last 10 years, you've never been in these waters. So they're trying to begin to do that. So that's why now we're intentionally going out of our way to drive through their neighborhood in international waters. Just to remind them, hey, this is still a neighborhood. This is not your backyard. You know, you have to share these waters with your surrounding nations and the international community. But China is being very aggressive in expanding its, you know, its area of influence and its territorial claims out into what has been historically international waters. So I hope they stop that. There's no indication that they're ever going to stop that. And this may just continue on forever. They protest. We continue to sail in international waters. And that's just the end of it. That's going to be the new normal for them going forward. Anyway, great video. Gustav Upton, thank you, sir. Okay, let's go ahead and go to G.S. Lisman. Oh, Lord have mercy. Woo! Apparently G.S. had some time to write a book. Okay, he says, "Hi, I got a question for you bumping around in my head since you've been very informative on a piece on the Trident that got a synthetic aperture sonar." Oh, yeah. He says, "If memory serves, that vertical ray further midship should fill in some blind spots." Yes, it will. Oh, so he's referring to a newspaper, a war zone article by Tyler Rogaway, who asked me to comment or give them a quote to use in their piece about the USS Tennessee now has a synthetic sonar array at the halfway point between the bow and the stern, one on each side. And yeah, it's a very advanced passive array that can listen in directions that, say, the bow mounted array cannot. In addition to directions that it can. So just, it kind of fills in some blind spots, and honestly can't go into any more detail than that about it. You know, it's just a great place to put a sonar array. Continuing on with his question, he says, thing is, some of your excellent submarine briefs, you describe the sonar cylinders in Soviet legacy systems as lacking precision of the sonar sphere, and it itself leaves some blind spots. So whenever I say that a sphere is better than the cylinder, the sphere is curved in three dimensions, right? Where a cylinder is two dimensional. So what the Soviets do to make their sonar sphere or sonar cylinder three dimensional is they have to combine beams by doing something called hamming and weighing the beams together. And every time you do that, you lose a little bit of sensitivity. So we take advantage of that by making our spherical array sonar arrays that are already ball shaped, you know, three dimensionally shaped in a sphere. We don't need to combine those beams to bend them digitally inside the system, even though we can, we don't have to. So we can get raw data from any direction because it's a ball. We don't have a limitation up and down, you know? So that's really the big thing. It's all about sensitivity because we're trying to get every little decibel we can. Every fraction of a decibel is so important because our lead, our acoustic advantage is that narrow now. So he says, this got me wondering, is it perhaps possible that by adding further arrays somewhere along the hull, the sonar cylinder might be made part of the synthetic aperture? Yes, we can combine arrays digitally. So what they'll do is they'll take the towed array, that midpoint array, whatever they're calling it. I think they're calling it the vertical sonar array or something like that. It's V something. And then the bow array, and combine them all into one big array. Yeah, that's all done digitally now. For sure. You hit the nail on the head, GS. I don't know if you're involved in any of these programs, but you should be because you know what you're talking about when you ask these questions. He goes on to say, could it be that might have already done that? Yes, the answer is they've already done that. So the baffle region is being reduced. Yep. He says, I'm picturing something like the last of the Typhoons get tracked by NATO attack submarines. When the launch order does come, surprise, the Typhoon's crew know exactly where to turn, where to shoot the interloper. Oh, yeah, if they had installed it on the Typhoon, I suppose they would have the same advantage that we have. The thing is, the Typhoon does not have an array like that. The Typhoon does have a towed array, and it has a bow-mounted array. Okay. The second half of his book, chapter 5 here, he says, I believe you mentioned that the rocket torpedo with a nuclear warhead is of new use since it is short range. Yeah, I don't know. I have a lot of really smart people telling me that I'm wrong on that. So I guess maybe I am, you know, but here it is. The rocket propelled torpedo that the Russians have, they have a couple different versions of it. One only goes out 7,000 yards and explodes. That's 3.5 miles. One goes out 4.5 miles and explodes. And in my mind, if you have a nuclear explosion, I don't care how small it is. There's no such thing as a small nuclear explosion, in my opinion, only 4 miles away from you. If you were standing behind a brick wall, you would probably die. But if you're submerged in a medium that does not compress, all that energy is going to be transmitted to you even harder because water does not compress until it hits your submarine. That does compress because it's made out of metal, and inside that metal is air. And with that air are human bodies. All those things will compress. So I imagine the shockwave submerged would be even more intense from a nuclear explosion than a shockwave in the air because of the density of the water, and water does not compress, so you're getting the full force. That was my reason for saying that if you shoot a nuclear weapon underwater, that's only going to go out 4.5 miles at its longest range. That's in long mode. You're still going to get hit by that shockwave and probably not survive. And let's say the shockwave isn't as bad as I think it is. It doesn't kill the humans, but you're still going to feel it. That's going to break valves and seals that have seawater, hydraulic oil, high pressure air inside the submarine at the very least. So you're going to have casualties like that that could result in you losing the submarine. Okay. So I don't know. I'm sticking by my guns that I think that it's a suicide weapon, but to be fair, I have just about everybody that I trust that's in the Navy, active duty, or a naval engineer that I talk to tells me that it's not a suicide weapon, that they would survive the attack. Okay. So I give you both sides and let you guys make up your mind. I could be wrong. I just I have a hard time fathoming how anyone survives a nuclear explosion from only 4.5 miles away. Okay. It's an explosion measured in kilotons too. It's like, you know, I don't know the exact amount and I don't want to guess, but it's not a small explosion. Yeah. Suppose British Trident II. Okay, we're going to go on here. He says, suppose a British Trident II carrying half a dozen warheads, I believe, delivered from the U.S. W-88 yield in the neighborhood of half a megaton, so 50 kilotons. Right? 50, yeah. Even if they get only a single missile off before the non-rocket torpedo arrives, that could be six major cities eradicated. Yes, that's true. Okay, I see where you're going with this. But suppose it was launched soon enough that the first missile does not get out of the water. The nuclear blast would destroy the missile. Yeah, you're right. The missile would not... Okay, let's say a missile has nuclear warheads on it and it gets damaged and blasted by whatever, whether it's nuclear or not. Those missiles will not fizzle into a nuclear detonation, most likely, you know, because that takes a very specific set of circumstances for that fissile material to turn into what we know is a nuclear explosion, mushroom cloud. They would just fail. Now, they have some conventional explosives in those warheads as well. That might sympathetically detonate, but it wouldn't cause another nuclear explosion. So don't think that. Yeah. It takes a very specific set of circumstances. It's how we build these warheads. So that only certain things lead up to them being detonated. So they can't accidentally detonate, even if they are damaged by an explosion. You know, probably because they might be damaged by an explosion, we don't want that to happen, right? So he says, that's it. I'm cutting myself off here. Thank you, GS. Jesus, dude. You can break this up into several messages next time if you want. I would appreciate that. But thanks for the message. Okay, Bar Gunner here. He's been around forever. I know Bar Gunner. He says, here's what I was referring to with the 600 ship Navy. Oh, yeah. We were talking about our Navy's goal right now is to get to 330 ships. And we're struggling to get to 300 at the moment. So we did have a 600 ship plan at one time. So we're going to look at that link here in a second. He says, you talk about the current need to ramp up the Navy. I think this was the largest ramp up. Yeah, 600 ships would be a lot. He says, I brought back the Iowa, or it brought back the Iowa and gave us so many ships that are now being decommissioned. Anyways, I'm still fascinated by our Cold War Navy. Thank you for the great content and have a great weekend. You too, man. Well, let's take a look at this link that you sent us. It's a Wikipedia link, so it should be safe to look at here. I get a little nervous when I click links. You know what I'm saying? 600 ship Navy was a strategic plan of the U.S. Navy during the 1980s to rebuild its fleet after cutbacks that followed the Vietnam War, which originated with Republican leaders. It was an important campaign plank for Ronald Reagan in the 1980 presidential election, who advocated a larger military and strategic confrontation with the Soviet Union. The actual number of ships peaked at 594 ships in 1987. Really? I honestly didn't know we even had that many in 1987. I joined in 1990. So, wow. What a reduction, because we don't have anywhere near that now. So the program, the proposal was to recommission the Iowa class battleships. We did recommission two of them for the Gulf War, if you guys remember, and step up production of the Nimitz class, which I don't think we ever actually did. The idea was supported by Senators John Lehman, Secretary of the Navy. Oh, he became Secretary of the Navy. Yeah. And okay. Yeah, so this was Reagan's idea. I wonder if they show you the... Do they break down the numbers? Yeah, I mean, it kind of doesn't matter. This is like fan fiction at this point because this did not happen. But we wanted 600 ships. And it was under Ronald Reagan's administration where that idea became... I do remember that. That was big news. But boy, the cost of that. Could you imagine how expensive that would be just to maintain those ships? Ooh. All right, Newman's here. Newman says, hey, heard you mention needing to update the website and not sure how. I work for a web development team hosting company based in Muskegon, Michigan. We deal with WordPress websites, server, 200 clients nationwide. Our bread and butter is helping people maintain and manage their websites. We'd love to help you manage the site. Okay. Yeah, let's give this guy a little promotion here. Just he wants to help us out. I'll be happy to take a look. Website management, we take care of your websites so you can take care of your business. I like that because that's what I want to do is I don't want to be a web manager. I don't want to update my website. I want somebody else to do it. I want to be like, here, this is yours now. You know, I honestly don't have time. That's the thing. I don't have the time. Pricing, how much is it? I mean, I don't have money either, by the way. Maybe we could start a fund for this, you know. $47 a month. Okay. Unlimited edits. I don't want to edit. Oh, no. Oh, I see what it is. Okay. Yeah. See, I need a web manager. I need somebody that won't sell me this program. I want to pay somebody this money that will do these things for me. Yeah. Which I'm sure is going to be a lot more expensive than this. You know, I understand that. I'm okay with paying the money to the people that are going to take care of my website, but I need somebody who will take care of my website. Not somebody that will give me the tools to take care of my website. I need a tool. I want to hire a tool and I want to bang on the tool until the website's right. So if you want to be my bang, Jesus. Okay. Never mind. We're just going to move on. Thank you, Newman. I will, I'll give it another thought. Cause I don't have time to manage my own website. I just don't. And, I can barely manage my social media. I need somebody, here's what I need. Somebody that can manage my website and all my social medias. I need somebody that has the time to do that. And I will pay you money. I will bring you on. You won't be an employee cause I can't for legal reasons do that, but I'll contract you, pay you a salary, to take care of that business for sure. But that's not just for anybody. That's got to be somebody who's in the industry, has an established, you know, record that I can check out and verify. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. All right. Michael Bourne says, hey, Jai, fantastic work on the videos and streams. The quality and refinement really shows through. Thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to get better. Every stream I try to get better, whether it's a Subbrief lecture, Twitch stream, YouTube. I'm working very hard. He says, I'm loving the hard work, great attitude, investments, sub stories, frozen doors, and most of all the dick jokes. Yeah. I threw in a couple extra ones at the end of, so here's our format on Twitch, right? Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern time. I begin. The first segment is Cold Waters, right? And I try to keep that pretty clean and fun and light. And that's what goes on YouTube. That's why it's clean and light. And then we do the Naval News segment, which I try to just read the news, give some commentary and move out of that without creating too much of a fuss, because a lot of the Naval News involves some politics and I don't like politics at all. I don't want to talk about politics, but we have to engage in that just a little bit. So I kind of skirt around the edge a little bit there, and that goes on YouTube as well. But when we get back from the Naval News, we do a second segment of Cold Waters, and that's where I just let the reins go. And I'll do some innuendos, you know, whatever comes into my mind in terms of humor, I'll just say it because it's not going anywhere. The only people that ever hear those dick jokes or whatever are the people watching live, because we'll never turn that into a video. No. Now, if you want to go back to my Twitch channel, I have 2 weeks, I think it is, of previous live shows, and you can watch the whole thing ad free. Like on YouTube, you get ads, right? Don't watch them on YouTube. Watch them on Twitch. You can watch the whole thing, all 4 hours of it with no ads. I recommend you go there. The video quality is the same. You know, you just don't have all those interruptions. So if you're on a mobile device where you don't have ad block, go to Twitch and watch the replays. That's a little pro tip for you. So that's all the new questions. We're going to get to John here in a second. What was this? This is Dylan. Dylan and I were talking about the Canyon. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I should mention this. My YouTube channel's being flooded with bots right now in the comment section. So don't argue with anybody in the comment section. It's probably not even a person. Okay, the AI is very clever in how they phrase their statements, so it looks like you're talking to a person. And you might be. There's some real people there, but at least half, if not more than half, of the comments on my Naval News segments right now are bots, like literal bots. If you ever have a question about that, go to the person's YouTube page, see how long it's been around, if they've ever posted a video, if they have a real email address that's public, and if it's an actual email address, not just some random numbers and letters. You know, you can kind of tell for yourself who's real and who's not. I have a metric analytics system that tells me who's real and who's not. There's a lot of fake bots on my YouTube. Nothing I can do about it. I've been shadow banning some of them, but there's so many I'd spend more time shadow banning. They just come right back anyway. So, be careful about arguing on YouTube. You're just wasting your time. That's kind of what I told Mr. Dylan Green. And we want to wrap up here with, John Wells. We could go for on forever, but we're not going to. John Wells, he's a radio station manager who has a radio station show down in the Dallas area. Dallas Fort Worth area, and he invited me onto his show again. We've done a couple interviews now, and we talked about the Kursk on the anniversary of the Kursk sinking, the 21st anniversary. And you can find that interview here for yourself at usaradio.com, the Wells Report. I'm the very top one. I was the last segment of Friday's show. So go to, you know, 08 is August the 13th. Or no, that was the 12th. So day before, right here. Segment three of the 12th of August, right here. And you can hear his little voice here. We'll play just a little part of it. Whoa. That's the intro music right there. Yeah. Anyway, so I do a 25-minute or so interview. There's some commercials in there talking about the Kursk, and I recommend that. I'll go ahead and put this link, which will be this entire page, up in the description of this video. But you guys, make sure you go down to segment three of the 12th of August, right there. So 08, 12, 21, 25 minutes and 50 seconds. And that's my segment right there. If you've already seen the Kursk sub-brief, which most of you probably have, it's just a rehash of that. But it's interesting to say it again, say it in a different way. And of course, John has a lot of knowledge, and he adds to it as well. So thank you, John, for letting me on your show again. Like me and him are becoming radio buddies, right? And let me show you some of the other social medias that I'm on. This is where I need people or someone that's I trust that I can log on to my Facebook page. We have a front page on Facebook for Subbrief. It's only got 300 followers. There's not a lot of people here, but you know, I just like to have multiple ways for people to consume the free side of what we do here, not necessarily the paid Patreon side, because not everybody uses Patreon. And believe it or not, some people don't even use YouTube, you know. Some people like Facebook, a lot of people don't. So we have a Facebook page. And there's another website that many of you may not even know about called Reddit. Reddit can be a bit of a cesspool, so be careful if you go there. But we do have our own Reddit channel that has no moderators. So I need to find somebody I trust that, you know, that understands how Reddit works. And you guys can post on here too. Like these two gentlemen posted this do-it-yourself hydrophone recordings. There's two of those there. And all I have to do is it goes into a holding list that whenever I check this, and I try to check it a couple times a week, I have to click the little approve button that you see here. And then I approve your video or your comment, your photo, whatever it is. And this is a really good website. I really want Reddit to grow, because this can reach a lot of people that don't know I exist, and it'll bring more people into the community. Hopefully good people. That's really what we want. We only got three people online right now. Look at that. Three people reading our stuffs. So basically, as the sub briefs go onto YouTube, I try to post them over here as well. Again, I need somebody that can, you know, manage the website, update the website and all these social medias, whether it's Subbrief, Instagram, Subbrief on Facebook, Reddit, you know, and I'll manage the YouTube and the Patreon like I'm doing now. It's just all these additional social medias I don't have time for. I mean, already my wife is like, we never do anything. It's because I'm always doing something like this, which I do enjoy. But if I don't take care of my personal life, then this will fall apart too, right? That's how that works. So I want to thank you guys again as we wrap up here for being Patreons and YouTube member subscribers. And couldn't do it without you. You guys got me through 2020, if you don't know the backstory on that. My wife got laid off. The only income I had was the Patreons. And we had no internet. So I was like, how am I going to maintain the Patreons without internet? And it was a struggle. But you guys had faith. We got better. We're making better lectures. And now that we have internet again, we're doing a lot. So thank you for getting us through those tough times and your continued support, everybody, no matter what tier you are. You know, it doesn't matter. Tier one to tier department head. I do appreciate it. All right. Hey, we'll see you next month. The next sub brief is going to be the Utiloy ship brief. That's coming in September. Okay. I'll see you guys then. Bye.